The Bitcoin Group, the American original. For over the last 10 seconds, the sharpest Satoshis, the best Bitcoins, the hardest cryptocurrency talk. We'd like to welcome our panelists, Arnab Naskar from Stoker.io.
Hello, guys.
Dan Eve, the Crypto Raptor.
Howdy, Bitcoin peeps.
Joshua Shigala from thestandard.io.
To the ground! No, to the moon, come on.
And I'm Thomas Hunt from the World Crypto Network. Moving on to issue one. Issue one, Bitcoin and Ethereum prices usually mirror the stock market. Is that changing? Yes, the price of Bitcoin and Ethereum have mirrored the stock market as of late, until recently. Many people believing that Ethereum and Bitcoin are risk assets fled the market when they got nervous, but now are piling back in while other risk assets are not recovering in the same way. Arnab Naskar, what do you think about Bitcoin being linked to the stock market? Is it over or did it never begin?
I think Bitcoin is the biggest stablecoin right now where euro is going down, right? You see the, like, who calls about volatility? Like, look at the volatility of euro, right? And pound is crazy, right? Bitcoin is the only stable currency right now at the moment. So yeah.
Imagine holding the pound right now. What a nightmare. Pound in your savings accounts everywhere.
It's rotting. It's crazy because if you see, you know, the current market, every currency is so volatile compared to Bitcoin. So it's not correlated. It's kind of shining on its own. The more you bring down with all this kind of restrictions and regulations and trying to, you know, to restrict this self-sovereign wallets, the more it will be stable and more it will go up.
Dan Eve, has Bitcoin broken out? Is it embarrassing the other currencies?
I think Arnab makes a great point about Bitcoin as a stable coin, right? That's kind of the almost not that the end game is that all other currencies are so insignificant that Bitcoin becomes the one that is the most stable, like rather than this being volatile asset. It has been slightly less volatile over the years, as in compared to when it first started out, and that's sort of smoothing out. And that's possibly because of the fact that the price is just increased, you know, it's going up compared to other fiat currencies. But everyone's been waiting for this great decoupling event, and almost as much as they get excited for their halvenings, because that's kind of when Bitcoin really makes it, right? When it really truly stands out as an asset that's not linked to any other market. It's completely, even to fiat currencies, it stands out amongst stocks, amongst pensions, government bonds, everything. Just unlink it from everything and let Bitcoin just do its thing. So I'm all for Bitcoin, the stable coin.
Joshua Shigala, is this it? Is this the great decoupling where Bitcoin breaks loose?
Yeah, it seems to be. A lot of people, this happens with gold as well. A lot of people say that gold is this exit value, this value that you jump into when inflation hits. But everyone's always concerned when there is a big economic crisis or crash. Why is gold going down? I thought it was meant to be the hedge. No. But actually, in a crash or in a disturbance, a market disturbance, cash is king. And everyone gets out of every position because they need to cover all sorts of positions. And in that moment, Bitcoin sucks. But follow the thesis of a rare asset, a rare number, where you know exactly how many Bitcoin there will be in 100 years time. You generally, you don't know that as much with gold, but you know that it's rare and it's hard to get out of the ground. And so after the fact, when everything starts to continue tanking, after the fact is where it continues going up. And I think that's where we're seeing it right now. The market's gone down enough, and now it's time for people to jump back into Bitcoin.
Things in Bitcoin are getting so good, the media is starting to write articles about what will happen when it's not worth mining Bitcoin. You know, when there's no block reward in 2140? Boy, that's going to be a problem. We're going to need to get the boys down in the newsroom on that. And now, exit question time for you to predict against the Bitcoin predictor ball, the prognosticator of prognosticators. Arnob, will the price of Bitcoin be higher or lower this time next week?
Bitcoin is always to the moon, right? It always goes up. But the thing is that, you know, the question is, are we seeing, as Joshua mentioned, is it a short-term objective or it's a long-term, right? Long-term is definitely, I think there is a price appreciation possibilities in the Bitcoin. But in short-term, I think Bitcoin is resilient. This is, I think, very key, right? The Bitcoin resilience is much more resilient than even stock market assets, even British government bonds, right? Sovereign bonds, right? This is, I think, fantastic. Like, your Bitcoin as an asset class is competing with well-established government sovereign debt instruments. And this is mind-blowing.
No gambling advice from Arnob. Dan Eve, higher or lower?
I'm so wrong all the time. I don't even want to say. But I think we are going slightly down. I think we are going slightly down again. I'm still on my negative Nancy run.
Joshua Shigala, the pessimism is back with Dan. Will you say higher or lower?
I tend to think that it'll be a sideways motion. Now, we've seen such catastrophic downwards over the last, since the beginning of the year, that I feel we've kind of hit the precipice of maybe trying to go sideways, trying to edge up and sideways. I wouldn't call the bottom yet. I do feel like if there is another major event, if things escalate in Eastern Europe, we could see further collapse as people scramble for cash and look for other places to put things in, usually land or just other assets. Right now, as it stands with the news, with the headlines, I think we're sideways up.
The best thing about price movements is just when you think it's over, it goes down another 50%. And now the ball we're shaking, which could cause a bubble. Will the price of Bitcoin be higher this time next week? Ask again. The ball doesn't even want to answer. God. That's what it's like when you have an oracle. You don't always get the answer you like. Sometimes you get the answer the oracle wants to give you. Moving on to issue two. Elon Musk is buying Twitter again. Yes, Elon Musk is buying Twitter. It doesn't seem like he could get out of the old deal, and he's stuck back in. Also, we've got all of Elon's tweets and texts from the text dump from his trial. People were advising him on what to do with Twitter. Elon was struggling with the troubles of being a boss, preferring to be more of an engineer. Yet now he's taking over Twitter. Dan Eve, Elon Musk taking over Twitter. Good for society, bad for society, good for Twitter, bad for Twitter.
Well, it's definitely a very polarized thing, right? But the political aspect, I think, has got a lot of people, especially after he ruffled a lot of feathers recently with his ideas about how the Ukraine-Russia kind of conflict needs to be settled. And that did a lot of feather ruffling, right? And already some people see him as like some, you know, he gets called far right and all sorts. I think that there is a bit of evidence that the right people or conservatives, and right, the far right, but the conservatives do seem to kind of get, you know, deplatformed a lot easier than the left does. And what I think is quite ironic is that people are going, oh, if But if Musk buys Twitter, then it could change the course of an election. And they're like, yeah, by removing all the biggest speakers of certain areas, you probably could do that, couldn't you? Which is what's happened in recent years. You know, I'm not saying that it did have an effect, but you know, by dampening certain voices, then you will get a sway in public opinion, especially with a platform so big as Twitter. There's definitely a lot of general. I think hatred for Elon at the moment anyway. He does seem to ruffle feathers on all sides though. And I think that he's quite an antagonist, but some of it's quite funny, right? He likes to stoke fires and obviously he thinks he's a bit of a kind of a bad boy, but a good boy with the sort of the green environment thing, but also saving humanity with these giant rockets, etc. I like the fact that some of the examples of the text and that art, one of the articles was the controversial idea. And one of the controversial ideas, the first one they mention is an open source Twitter, but they don't give any reason why that would be controversial. I mean, for us, an open source Twitter sounds amazing, right? It's open source, like everyone supports open source work. But then they also criticize the controversial idea of using Doge to tweet, right? So paying micro amounts, which is essentially like hashcash, right? It's like paying for, you know, email in order to then, you know, so that you're not spamming essentially. So to pick those two as controversial ideas, I think that, you know, it kind of lends a bit to the idea that they're not really thinking about the underlying idea. They're just hating on whatever Elon Musk says. But, you know, someone in that position of power is always going to ruffle a lot of feathers. I don't know whether it's good or bad. Ultimately, I hope ultimately it's good. I hope that it doesn't become, it doesn't pendulum swing to the other side and that it becomes some sort of like, you know, a crazy platform of like chaos and, you know, destruction and that, you know. I just, you know, I think it just needs to reach an equilibrium, and how we get there, I don't know. And I hope that if he does buy it, then it just doesn't go all chaotic and you know, things become a bit more fair all round rather than, you know, than just swinging one side or the other.
I think Dan's reading a little bit from future advertisements for the service, a fantastic platform of chaos and destruction. The problem is, and I'm sure we're going to find this out all together as a group, but free speech doesn't get you an Athenian democracy, right? It's not Plato and Socrates having a discussion in the square. Usually it's Plato throwing shit at Socrates while Socrates is posting pictures of Plato's ex-girlfriend. Like, it goes to the lowest point as fast as it can. So the fears of an open source Twitter is probably an unregulated Twitter, read i.e. 4chan. And much of the conservative fears and we really deplatform people like they're behaving more like they're in 4chan, less in the Athenian democracy. And while that's a high goal, I think we could shoot for the middle in there and have more of a discussion-based website. I fear for what Elon will do with Twitter. And I also fear what will happen when he opens up the books and uncracks things and finds out there's not a giant censorship machine. It's more of this general problem of internet sludge. Like, the sludge just rises, and you as a startup, whether you're giving out Bitcoin loans or giving out people a platform where they can say words and pictures, the sludge will get to you. So I hope Elon is ready to fight the sludge of the internet trolls and the spam and the trash. Joshua Shigala, your thoughts on Elon Musk taking over Twitter?
Yeah, it's about time. I mean, he decided to buy this thing off a weird whim. I don't know what. He sort of tweeted, hey, what do you guys think of Twitter? This is important or something. And then the next week he's like, yeah, okay, fuck it, I'll buy it. And then...
That's always how you want your executives to make their decisions, to like throw them out on the side. Hey, should we get some Disney stock this week? What do you think?
Yeah, but at the end of the day, you know, I haven't gone through the list of texts and the text dump and stuff that happened. But I do know a thing or two about buying businesses. And if you're a big public figure, the way he went about it to try to lower the price was good, but I don't think he got a lower price in the end. I'm not sure. What do you guys remember what he originally offered? Was it 54 cents?
It seems that this is still the original deal. And okay. Part of the problem was when he pulled back and claimed that there were too many bots or whatever his reason was, legally he didn't have a way to pull back. The contract was already rolling, the thing was rolling. So this is more like he's still buying Twitter, and I'm not sure it really went away.
Oh, right. Because generally what you want to do is, and this is typical modus operandi of a VC, and actually for anyone raising money as a startup, be wary of this, because what will happen is the VC will tear you to shreds, and that's their whole point, because they want to lower the valuation. And so you have to steadfast not listen to that nonsense and go, no, my product isn't that, and have comebacks, or just simply believe it. And you know, this is kind of what he was doing. He's putting his VC hat on and slagging the shit out of Twitter to try and lower the valuation to then come back in with a new price. Hence, it didn't really work contractually. It seems that it didn't work, but that's kind of what it felt like, is destroy it in the public square and then come in and snack on it. But yeah, I think it's a good thing. Twitter needs disruption. It's been very stagnant. Like, there's been no real true updates. There's been a few little things like, oh, let's make the heart like animate as you click it and stuff like that. But like, come on, things like edits and stuff. And they've said, oh, well, how do we do edits without like confusing the hell out of people? Well, everyone else has solved this problem, man, by just, you show the edits, you just click show edits, and then boom, you've solved the problem. It's not a big deal. And you know, for those that think that it won't be censored, it will be censored with Elon. It has to be, because otherwise you'll see god-awful imagery, you'll see the worst of humanity. You know, I mean, you can't just have, you know, this is why you got these poor souls that go through and check what people are uploading to see like heads being cut off and real murders and child you know, just awful, awful stuff that you never want to see. So there's always a place for censorship. It's just how do you define that line, where to go? And, you know, it is really, for me, and my personal opinion on this is, it's to pick on political, you know, to sort of skew your motivations to ban certain things on political talk, or even on discussions of, let's say, vaccine hesitancy and stuff like that, I think it's a really, really bad move, because it stops the conversation. And if your conversation is true, then you should be able to back that up. And by just sort of banning stuff outright, first of all, you're not really stopping the conversation. Those people tend to go somewhere else and then get stuck in a silo, and then strengthen their opinion rather than having an open dialogue with two opposing opinions, which is extraordinarily important. But yeah, well, let's see what happens. I think it's a good thing. I think, you know, Musk tends to push his employees to iterate very quickly, to work and push updates. I mean, we're seeing stuff out of Tesla and out of, mainly Tesla. In terms of these bots, the robot that they've come up with, if you looked at the latest AI stuff, stuff gets iterated very quickly. Updates come out often. You know, that's very different to Twitter. I don't know what all their employees are doing, to be honest. I don't get it. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
It's interesting that Twitter is kind of a news site, part of a debate website. But at the same time, like Josh is saying, we want to try to find a way to have a positive debate, to have a constructive conversation. So many times it falls down into name calling and just personal attacks. And then especially, as Josh is saying, during a crisis, it's very confusing where a public platform should be between public safety, medical information, which again is changing all the time, because we just didn't know. The virus information was coming in day at a time, just like any other scientific or historical project, and we just have to deal with that. But sadly, when Elon Musk was attacking Twitter, he was using Twitter to attack Twitter, so it never looked good in the interim there. I don't think he got the price down at all. Arnab, your thoughts on Elon taking over Twitter?
Yes, I think Dan and Joshua highlighted like almost all the relevant points, right? So let me give you some very crazy ideas on the table, right? So I have a conspiracy theory here, right? And this is the conspiracy theory. So the reason why Elon wanted to buy the Twitter was to make a use case of Dogecoin. Doge finally is coming. So that was, I think he wanted to make it like, if you're tweeting and you're commenting on Twitter, unless Elon's post, you need to spend a little bit in Doge so you get the right to comment. So yeah, who knows? Maybe that's the ultimate motive of Elon to finally give a use case to his beloved Dogecoin.
And Twitter Doge's layer two.
Well, let's ask the crew here. What do you guys think? Is it a good idea? I mean, obviously, maybe if you use Lightning instead of Dogecoin, it would be okay to pay a few micro pennies to tweet. People have talked about this idea before. You basically, for the audience, you punish the spammers. The spammers now have to pay and they don't get their money back. Whereas if the message goes out and it's not marked spam, you could actually give them their penny back. So it doesn't cost you to tweet. It's more like a reserve. But if you put a bad tweet out there that's labeled spam, then they'll take your micro penny. Dan, what do you think? Is this a good idea?
Well, yeah, the Hashcash idea had, you know, is purely built on the idea of removing or reducing spam. So, you know, it comes from a good solid background, I think. But whether Dogecoin is obviously the most appropriate coin for that, it's probably not very scalable, right? Unless they have if they put Lightning over Dogecoin, but which would be really silly. Lightning obviously would be the best alternative, but even Jack Dorsey's sort of swung around, and talked about Ethereum before, haven't they? Implemented the Twitter. You can verify your profile via an NFT. So, you know, it would be best using Lightning because that's the most scalable so far, but it wouldn't surprise me even if they come up with their own, to be honest. If Elon Musk really, he obviously believes in cryptocurrency and Bitcoins, specifically, and then obviously flirts with Doge all the time. Why wouldn't he create his own coin and then become, even more insanely rich from pumping his own shitcoin?
It is sad because it's a really good idea. It's very similar to Hashcash, as Dan said, but then he mentions Dogecoin and there's just this huge rippling laugh through the room. And it's just, you're just not a very serious person if you're talking about Dogecoin at this point in Bitcoin history. Joshua Shigala, what do you think about the idea of using Dogecoin or maybe Lightning to pay micro pennies to tweet? Then if your tweet's not spam, you get your micro pennies back. Then we can punish all the spammers.
I actually don't see how there's any other solution. As we've moved forward, AI is getting, these capture images, whatever they're called, they're just a piece of piss for these AIs to solve now. And there's not one that you can invent that will differentiate humans from bots that bots can't do. Anyone can look at how far AI has jumped, even in the last 4 months, when it comes to DALL-E 2, when it comes to Midjourney, that you can see it right there. That's a very visual representation how far it's come, because a lot of people didn't see AI sneaking up on it and the evolution of AI. So the entire internet now, when the capture can be solved by an AI, what that means, and you have to really understand this, and most people really won't understand the level of bots that will overtake the internet to try to sell real humans something, will be so extraordinary that most of the internet will be like 99.99999% of the internet will be robotically generated and robots talking like humans to try to get to sell you something, and even fooling other bots. So other bots will just be talking to each other, thinking that they're human. And so it's just be a barrage of info about from bots. So the only way to deal with that, and this isn't even a proper solution, because the only way to really deal with that is to try to, pay for every post that you do. Now, what will do, it doesn't take many brain cells to go, oh, I might buy this, talk about it, and it'll go up. And so I think it's more about education, because you can, I see this only as a cash grab from the SEC. It doesn't teach anyone anything. It doesn't stop this from happening. People will just continue doing it. What really needs to happen is the SEC should actually take that 1.3 million and put it into education, maybe, and teaching people what scams look like, how they work. What if you send some random Twitter account one Bitcoin, they're not going to send you two back, even if it does have Elon Musk's face on it. Like, just educating the people. No, instead they'll just find the people. It's just a sort of a cash cow for them. You know, in fact, it's so bad that the game theoretically it's set up that they don't want that sort of stuff to stop, because then the cash will stop. So they don't want people to stop doing that, really, because then they'll stop getting fines. It's just like people don't, the government doesn't really want to stop people speeding, because then the speeding fines will stop. So instead, they'll just sort of, keep on fining people instead of, making better roads or something. I'm sort of going off track here, but the fact of the matter is, the only way to really help people is to educate them on what scams look like.
Well, I look forward to their public relations commercials. This is your brain. This is your brain on a scam. Don't let your brain fall to a scam. But no, I thought there wasn't enough fine. She has far too much money. She made far too much money. Josh is right. None of this money went to the victims. None of this money helps any of the people that purchased Ethereum Max and thought it would be a real project. It is funny to say that some advertising is okay and other advertising is not okay, when we see how much alcohol and cigarettes and other things can destroy people's lives, physically destroying their bodies, even crazy prescription drug ads all over my TV, all of them destructive in their own ways, which they read the little disclaimer for. So it is interesting. Some advertising is good, some advertising is bad, but once again, they're just far too late. The sheriffs came in, all the cows are gone, everyone's made their money. Arnab Naskar, what do you think of Kim Kardashian facing the ultimate $1.3 million fine?
It's a joke. Fucking joke. Come on, you know, like this lady has crazy amount of money. And you're like, as Joshua mentioned, it's just a joke. It should not be in news also, to be very frank, right? I don't think it's a penny that she got from her last divorce, right? It's nothing. It's just a mockery, right? It's a mockery. She made more money, and who knows, you know, how much she actually got from weird shit coins also, which she sold with Ether or something like that. Nobody knows it. And this, I think this kind of stuff should be stopped. I think SEC is making fun of all these kind of scams. So it's kind of an exit opportunity for a lot of scammers, for me. It's nothing more than
that. Well, and are they really teaching Kim not to do this next time? Are they teaching her not to get caught next time? Next time you need to do a better job. You need to get more money under the table. You need to use Monero, whatever it is. They're training better scammers, I feel.
No, I think it's much better. Like, you are giving them a price of scamming, right? So you should know, you should not scam of 10,000 to people. You should scam of something around a billion. Then you pay around 10% of it and then leave. So till you are making money out of 90%, right? That makes it legitimate, right?
And still so many other crypto scammers are out there not even paying a parsley million. Dan, Eve, what about Kim Kardashian? Once she broke the internet, now she's breaking fines.
Well, first of all, Ethereum Max, that just makes me feel, it makes me like vomit in my mouth while just thinking about
it. What if we put a plus on there? Pluses are very popular. Ethereum Max
Ethereum
Plus.
Ethereum Max Plus. Also, she did, in fairness, in this tweet, well, series of tweets, she did put hashtag ad, right? So she kind of, like, you know, I think they kind of almost got her on a gotcha there, right? In fairness. And 1.3, I'm no Kim Kardashian fan by any stretch. I can't watch the program when it's on in the background. The girlfriend watches it. It's just like, oh, it's sickening. It's just boring, right? Not sickening, but just boring. But come on, I think, you know, 1.3 million, it was the biggest fine so far. It's more than Mayweather and the others got fined by a very significant amount. And I think having the hashtag ad in there, I do think it's a bit overkill, but at the same time, it's significant compared to our overall wealth of $1.7 billion. Like they've said, it's only a $100 fine now. So compared to what the average person would have had in terms of the average household. So if you're saying, like, Oh, what she did had such a massive impact that if it was a normal person, they'd be fined $100. Like, most people would laugh at $100, in fairness. So even though it's 1.3 million, it's a lot. If they're really saying it's as bad as they think they're saying it is, then it should have been more than 1.3 million, simple as. But what I think was quite funny was that a few of Gensler's comments. So one, the fact that he said the investing public shouldn't confuse the skills of celebrities with the very different skills needed to offer appropriate investment advice. Now, like, they don't have any skills when it comes to investment advice. They're just literally being paid by someone to shill it. So that's one thing that's definitely very true, is that you know, these people don't care that it's going to go up or down. They care that they're getting 300K for shilling something. The fact that she as part of the deal, the fine, she promised not to shill anything for 3 years. So Kim Kardashian, at least we're safe now for 3 years. She's not going to be shilling any shit coins for another 3 years. But some of the other hashtag she put on there was disrupt history. You know, disrupt history with Ethereum Max Plus. Oh, the whole thing just makes you want to curl up and cry. Going back to Josh's point, I think that what it really is, you know, is sad is that this money isn't like everything. Every time a fine happens, it would be great if they were like, it's like a donation to charity. They were like, with this 1.3 million, 300,000 went into education. 500,000 went into this. 500,000 went into that. But it doesn't. It just gets cycled into the system, and it becomes this giant money churning thing that doesn't really have any value other than stifling industries and sort of just, you know, trying to create court cases. It's basically that 1.3 million is almost certainly going to just go to lawyers in other court cases trying to try their luck on other things that they think are dodgy, that the SEC says is dodgy. It's basically a gambling machine for the SEC. They want to put their money in. They think they're what their odds of winning are, and they may win, they may lose. If they win, they get more money. If they lose, they pay some legal fees. But the legal fees were paid by a previous person they sued anyway. So it doesn't actually help anyone overall. It just makes more profit for lawyers. And I think that's what's the sad thing, right? You want to see a net positive effect from all this. I totally agree with Josh on that. Like, you want to see that the money's going somewhere and helping the people that are meant to be now disadvantaged because of the people that they're suing. Like, and it doesn't make sense not to do that.
Yeah, and not only that. I mean, when we had John McAfee shilling his stuff, like, everyone knew what was happening generally if you had half a head on. Like, come on, like, you couldn't. It was like,
unfortunately, Josh, there, I agree that all the crypto people, and we were all laughing, but sadly there are a lot of other people that come into a new sphere and they're like that new guy at the bar, and they're just like, what am I going to buy, what am I going to invest in? And there's this slot machine over here, and there's this slot machine over here, and they all look the same to him, and he sees the McAfee logo, or he sees Kim Kardashian's beautiful body, and he's like, that's where I'm going. That's how I'm making my investment decisions.
I mean, you know, previously. I mean, I agree, but I don't have the data for this point, but I'm guessing it's probably right. The amount of money lost through that is insignificant to the amount of money lost through, like, the latest scam is, I see it all the time on Twitter. Why isn't anyone talking about this? And then it's a video link to like to write your own arbitrage bot to front run uni. Now, if you're looking into it deeper, it uses dependencies that you have to link up and then install on your servers or on your local machine, and that's basically a bot that will steal your crypto, you know, or checks your clipboard or whatever. So,
you know, as long as it shows it going down, as long as it shows you the experience of the thing, it's kind of fair, right? You know, like, you got your ride. You just never were going to win.
That there's so many scams. The SEC is picking on one tiny little scam, which is famous people talking about something and not disclosing. And she even said hashtag ad. I don't know, but really, again, it comes back to education. It comes back to people actually understanding that, hey, I bought this thing from McAfee and the next day it went down. I did it again. It went down. Probably not going to do that again because now I get what's going on. And I'm going to tell my friends not to do that. And you know, this is how it works. The state constantly shielding people is only harmful in the long run, I see, if they're not using that money to educate. And I don't know. That's just
it does seem like all roads lead back to critical thinking and understanding propaganda or advertising. And if we teach the people enough critical thinking, then they'll understand the propaganda and the advertising, which would be good for avoiding scams, but bad for all the work we have to do with the propaganda and the advertising. So it's almost as if we keep people ignorant. We defy that most things need research. Most things need thought. You don't get anything for easy. Like Josh is saying, the Elon Musk's or the Ethereum or whatever, send us your one Bitcoin and we'll send you two back. It sounds too good to be true. It probably is. But if you were fired up and you were in the right mindset and you're watching the video and you're getting excited about Bitcoin and you think, sure, Elon or Bill Gates or whoever it is has lots of money, they'll send me, you know, double. You could do it and you could fall to this kind of thing. So it really is education and critical thinking.
And what you were saying, the last bit of what you were saying, Josh, it reminds me of a famous saying by someone who said, there's an old saying in Tennessee. No, it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me, you can't get fooled again. I think his name was George W. Bush.
George W. Classic moments in history. I'm going to throw a shoe at you now.
Yeah. A classic. We've got to make the pie higher. But let's move on to the next issue. Issue 5. Celsius disclosed names and transaction history of all users during bankruptcy. Any wallet that interacted with Celsius is now publicly linked to your government ID. The court had a choice. They could have made this information public, or they could have whited it out and redacted it. They chose to make it public. So once again, if you interacted with the Celsius exchange, if you put your information in there, your information is now in a court document. Many people saying that their Bitcoin or Ethereum wallets could now be exposed, leading them to harassment and perhaps even theft and violence. Arnab, what do you think about Celsius and moreover the court disclosing this information?
Yes, I think the drama that is happening with Celsius in the last, I would say, couple of weeks, which is painful for a lot of people in the industry, in the current market, a lot of people have lost. And Celsius was definitely, you know, the market, like Alex is a marketing machine, right? He was definitely as a marketing genius, and he caught all these big players thinking, you know, Celsius is a safe space to put their money in. But somehow, you know, all this party works perfectly fine when the, you know, party light is going on and the music is on, right? The moment you turn off the music, then you will really know what is the real sound behind it, right? And now we are all seeing, right, everybody is holding bag full of shit coins, and some anchor protocol promised them some 20% return, which never happened. And then some Three Arrow Capital promised them to the moon and to the Mars, and now they cannot even pay for their yacht, right? And then you are holding bag of nothing, right? And then the only thing that can save you of Celsius is that classic age-old Bitcoin and the Bitcoin mining thing, which can only sell because other assets cannot bail them out. And it's painful to see how the process is going. And now we see Alex, I think, resigned last week itself, though what is coming to the news, and this is from the CoinDesk and other news channel, they have withdrawn over $42 million of their own money before Celsius went to bankruptcy. This is criminal, to be very frank, right? You do not do that. If you know something is going wrong and then you're withdrawing and then still tweeting out everything is fine, this is criminal. This is not something that has in, like, you cannot justify. And still staying the CEO till last few weeks and still supporting and telling, you know, hey, you know, trust me, I give you all the money back. Just believe in me and my mining business will go up. This is not working. And I think to a certain extent now, I was following in the Twitter session, I see Simon Dixon is really, you know, having one side of the, you know, camp, then there's some others on the other side of the camp. And I think now things are going into much more interesting discussion. I see Simon is taking much more, I would say, proactive role. And also it was found out after weeks that Alex never had a plan. Alex was always relying that somebody will magically come out of a plan and he will still be the CEO and will be still in the driving seat. But, you know, nothing comes at a free, right? There is no free lunch. And Alex is learning. Hopefully there will be much more to it. But one thing which is, as Thomas, you mentioned also here is, there is, I was checking actually before, like around something in the afternoon, around 14,000 pages have been disclosed, right? 14,000 pages of investors' name has been issued. At least they're intelligent enough not to put the addresses. That's at least not there visible. So yeah, thanks to their intelligence on that at least. But generally the names are out there. And yeah, this is, I think you may say, okay, KYC is kind of, you know, you are legitimizing a hack, right? Now they say, okay, it's legitimate because it's and the official documents, right? But there are also other ways you could have done it, right? It doesn't have to be so publicly, because I don't think XYZ, who has nothing to do with Celsius, really cares about those public names. So I think that sensitivity-ness is missing. And this is actually what we see is regulators are not equipped to manage a digital platform. The laws and regulators does not have any idea what they're dealing with. So trusting them is trusting, you know, a kind of wall which has no clue. And this is, I think the structure is there. Like you are going through all the bankruptcy process and everything, but they do not appreciate the fact that you're dealing with a digital platform, a digital business, where people's real money is connected to the digital wallet and which you can trace back. It's not the bank money is with some Swiss bank or some, you know, French bank or something like that. So yeah, this is, I think it's a very bad way. So first you lose your own money, then you lose your data. Now, who knows what else you will gonna lose there. So it's kind of the series of events that is happening with all the Celsius investors is very painful to watch and how things are unfolding. Hopefully, you know, there will be some kind of way out, because I don't think anybody will fill the hole. Sam may buy this at a very cheap price, because then the investors will anyways be holding nothing, because Sam will not fill the hole. He will maybe buy it at discount. So there will be losses. Somebody has to digest the loss. Now, the question is how it will come up and how long it will take to pay all the legal fees and all these court fees before some money is paid out to the investor. This is also a very important question to watch.
It is interesting. It's almost like a corollary to not your keys, not your coins, not your data once you give it away. And a lot of these people here were good customers of Celsius. They filled out all the forms, they put all their proper information in, and then now the company, and especially the court, are screwing them over by releasing that information. So once you have KYC'd, once you are in this system, you are at the mercy of this system, just as we saw Elon Musk with his tweets and his texts that were leaked. Now, all of this public or previously private information has leaked on these investors. And like Arnab was saying, when the good times are there and the music's playing and everything's fine, it's amazing to see what these people say and what they say their companies are capable of. I was watching CoffeeZilla again the other day, and they were talking about Terra and Luna. And one of the ideas floated is that Luna just wasn't big enough, that it would have been bigger and more people would have lost money, but then maybe the scam would have worked, or the little interest thing back and forth. It would have had less deviation if only it was bigger, which no one ever says after a scam. You're never like, after the Hindenburg, if only we'd packed more passengers in there, or the Titanic, you know, we could have had a sale. We could have put some more customers on there. This is a whole new idea in the crypto space. Dan, Eve, what do you think about Celsius? And of course, there's still space available on the Hindenburg and the Titanic.
Well, I'm with Arnab on this. This is, it's crazy that that Mashinsky just got to, you know, to bail out and to carry on, you know, tweeting and carrying on as if nothing had happened, and you know, saved his assets. And they're probably, no one's gonna ever probably go out or go after them, right? There's very few people that actually go down with the ship. It does sound like, you know, it with Celsius, it's not all completely over yet. I think Sam Bankman-Fried discussed how they would do a takeover of Celsius assets, like they did with Voyager. So it doesn't seem like it's quite over yet. But from the KYC side of things, like, you know, and you made a good point about not your keys, not your coins. But if, you know, if I give my, I used to be like really quite open about giving my KYC documents. And I wouldn't really care about it. I'd think, you know, these guys are, you know, they're just, you know, it's very unlikely something would go wrong with it. But then you only need to do like check like pwned.com and, or, you know, whatever it is, PWNED, and see how often your password's leaked, and just think how many times data's leaked and you don't even know about it. How many times your KYC, your passport's been shifted around somewhere and you don't even know, right? That information's been bought by someone. When you get like a bunch of like stupid dumb emails that target you, that's not what you've just signed up for some random service. That's someone who's bought your information and has targeted you, knowing you've got X amount of cash and that you're, you know, from an exchange, and that you probably want to spend it on their products. Like, they're very, very sophisticated, these hacks, and it's very easy. Unfortunately, I've worked in a lot of places and seen a lot of places where the rules are so lax about data that you could easily just copy an entire database and sell it on. Like, unfortunately, there's not even an easy way of protecting that, you know, especially if you work in IT, like you have access to so many things. So, I don't know. I'm a lot more wary about giving my KYC out, now, even to whatever a business it is, because anyone can be susceptible. You know, we've seen it with Facebook, with accounts, with all the sort of big tech giants who you'd think would be absolutely airtight, right? These are big Silicon Valley like places, and there shouldn't be any data leaks or password breaches or anything like that. There was even a huge one with Sony, wasn't there, a few years ago? Like, nothing is infallible, you know, from that respect. And in the list of Celsius Celsius users, I remember reading the list of just some of the, I think someone compiled like a list of the main ones that are worth noting. And it's their customers were anyone from like the WEF to the world governments to like random businesses to like Walmart and all, like, I think it was Walmart. There's just absolutely amazing, like, plethora of businesses you'd never have thought would be dilly-dallying in crypto. And that was really quite an eye-opener. But the last thing on this was the my favorite quote about the whole situation was from Casey Newton on Twitter, which is, two Celsius founders have now resigned. For context, that's 35.6 founders in Fahrenheit.
That was a great joke. Excellent joke online. I agree, Dan. A lot of people give up their KYC far too easily, but remember, they're giving it up because they're going to get that killer altcoin and they're going to win big money, or they're going to get 10% off their groceries, or they're going to something else. There's a reason, and they always give it up. And I also want to agree with Dan. Most places you could probably copy the entire database, not even leave a log, or if it does leave a log, the same person copying that database has the access to edit the logs. So we're not in a good place on computer security still, and we're just putting more and more data into these computers. Joshua Shigala, what do you think about the court's decision to leak all of the Celsius investors? Probably getting yourself a Rolodex out there, huh?
I mean, I think it's an abomination. Like, it's too late for these
abomination
words. Abomination. No, it really is shocking, absolutely shocking, and it shows that the state, or at least the courts, don't understand what this thing is, what crypto is, because it's a bearer-based asset. It's very, very dangerous for people to be doxxed. It happened a lot after the Ledger leak, where people were getting threats of violence. We know where you live, hand over some money, all this sort of stuff. It's very, very dangerous. So I think there needs to be a lawsuit. Because that sort of thing just cannot happen. You cannot, these poor people lost all their money, and now they get this punishment as well. And for those that don't know how bad it is to have your identity stolen, a friend of mine, he went to get a new SIM card or something, a phone contract. And he got denied. He's like, oh, I'm like an upstanding citizen, you know. And it turns out his identity had been stolen by some leak or some hack from some KYC thing that then got leaked. The attackers used the identity to open bank accounts, take loans out in his name, and of course didn't pay it back. He got a black mark. This was years and years ago, guys. And he worked for, I don't know, like 6 years trying to get that black mark off of his name, off his credit score. 6 years. And then what happened? And this is not funny, but it's just nuts. It was like a year later, it happened to him again because his identity was already out there. His identity was already floating around everywhere. So once it's gone, it's gone. Once this here is gone, your biometrics are out there and all the data to it is gone, then it's pretty much hard to claw back. And this is why I've been a big proponent for building new systems where you build an avatar online and you give reputation to that, and if that gets and this would be through a private key that you can then turn off if it gets stopped, like if it somehow gets compromised. But the way that we're doing it right now with biometrics and holding things across your face, and again, this goes back to a point I said before with bots and AI getting better and better, it's only a matter of time until deep fakes can pretend to be anybody and open accounts. So something does need to be done with KYC. I think it's absolutely atrocious that the court released this data. What the hell are they thinking? Is this a sick? It should be a suable offense. And I'm really shocked. And I back Simon Dixon in everything he's doing there. I thought, I don't know why anyone was putting money into Celsius in the first place. I looked at it and I was like, why would you let a third party, why would you let Wall Street degens play with DeFi degens with your money? Doesn't make sense. But anyway, I hope they get, I hope someone takes them to court about that.
I'm sure it's all going to work out. That's awful. He had to wait 6 years to get his identity back. I think Terra Luna Do Kwon, they gave him a second chance to make Luna 2 in like 6 days, and they lost all that money too. So it is very bad out there. We're going to have to move on.
Luna 3 is going to be awesome though.
That's what they need. They just need the third time. They weren't ready the first two. But we're moving on to issue 5. European Union announces new sanctions against Russia, including a ban on all Russian Bitcoin wallets. Yes, they're actually trying to sanction the Bitcoin now. We're running a bit out of time. Arnab, will they be successful in stopping the flow of Bitcoin out of Russia?
How?
It seems like they're doing a personal approach. They're going more user by user. And maybe if you're a Russian oligarch, they won't let you send. But if you're just a normal Russian person, maybe you could send a couple $100. It does seem difficult.
They could not stop Wirecard circling billions and billions of money after even getting, I don't know, like you have heard about this interesting German company, Wirecard, which is a publicly listed company that had the same vision as Luna, that if they buy Deutsche Bank, they can actually close all their balance sheet problems, right? But, it doesn't happen, right? Sometimes, you have to realize that, the smaller scam cannot eat a bigger scam and then became, a legitimate business, right? This is a problem. And yeah, this is, I think to be very frank, sometimes all the sanctions is a good tool, overused for years. Now, literally, they don't have anything. So they have to publish something. So tomorrow they will, sanction Russian poop coming to the water, and something they will do in that regard. But I don't know how they will stop it. The same way as the Bitcoin, it's crazy, there's people are paying high amount of salaries in the European commissions and parliaments and those things. And there's still the thing, they can do it. Now, earlier they said, okay, within 10,000 USD, Euro, Bitcoin, blah, 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 stuff. So you can transact. Now you cannot transact anything. But how can you enforce? You are encouraging people to create a parallel economy, and that's what will happen. There will be a parallel Bitcoin economy which will never come to centralized exchange, never will go through chain analysis process, and never will go through any kind of transactions. And this is what I think the movement towards the de-dollarization, as we're talking about, right? You are legitimately encouraging by for creating alternative currency in the world, and more alternative currencies will be created as more and more sanction craziness will come.
It does seem like a real Streisand moment for cryptocurrencies beating sanctions. And it, of course, reminds me of that classic line from Star Wars, the more you tighten your grip, the more star systems will slip through your fingers. Dan, Eve, what about this harsh approach to Russian Bitcoin sanctions?
Well, I mean, you know, initially they did say that we're not going to sanction the Russian people. We're just sanctioning the oligarchs and the but now dropping it from 10,000 euros to everyone. It's like, you know, that they're obviously, you know, changing it now. Obviously, the ball game's changed in terms of how the war or the strategic operation has played out. But yeah, you know, this is it's just going to be a game of technological cat and mouse that they're never going to win. Because they, you know, even if it's like if you pick Bitcoin specifically, then people can use mixers to then buy wrapped Bitcoin on another chain and then disappear altogether. Like the only way I can see this being done effectively at the moment is just by them, you know, exchanges that agree to it or who bow down to it, sanctioning freezing the accounts that are already on system that are KYC'd. You know, that for new accounts, you can use all sorts of proxies and other things to be able to mask your address and whatever and pretend that you're not. You can, how about you could buy someone's fake ID if you're Russian and just use, you know, Fred from Shropshire in England. And then that way you're not Russian. You're using an exchange on behalf of someone else whose ID got stolen by a company that had poor security rules.
Or if a court released the names,
yeah. So it's, you know, there's plenty of ways they can side skirt it, and I just think it the people that are most likely to be able to avoid it are the rich anyway. So effectively, you're penalizing the smaller fish, which is the worst thing to do, because the rich have far more options to them around, unless they're super duper rich and they're already on some sort of crazy list. The rich have got far more options and around being able to scoot their money here, there, and everywhere, and advisors and stuff like that they can use. Whereas the average Joe or the average, I'm trying to think of an average Russian name, doesn't have that to their access. So you're penalizing the people that may not necessarily be the actual root cause of the problem. So I don't know. I think it's just a game that you're never going to lose, right? Crypto was built. Was built to be government resilient, and although exchanges can be involved and you can tighten the reins on exchanges, then there's other cryptocurrencies you can screw into to kind of temporarily hold your Bitcoin whilst it being on another chain, whilst you evade the authorities in some way. And, you know, I'm not saying it's a tool that can be used for that way. It's just like saying, well, when cars are around, you could use a car to drive away from bad trouble. But that happens in that's trouble that's after you in a bad way or a good way, right? The fact is that it's just an everlasting technological cat and mouse game. So I don't really think it's lowering the amount is going to have the effect that they think it's going to have.
It does seem like limiting transaction, whether it's a cap like a $10,000 transaction limit or a $1,000 per trade transaction limit, is just going to lead to people getting more accounts and to working their way around that, which, as Dan said, pretty soon you are punishing the small person, because $1,000 transactions is still a lot of money. It's still 10 grand. They're getting around it. Joshua Scala, your thoughts on this?
Well, yeah, it's kind of like the European Union now bans Russians from doing math. It just is a weird thing to say. But also, it seems to me like a little bit of a dress rehearsal for trying to ban crypto in general, to see how far they can squeeze the on and off ramps. I think what they don't really understand is that the on and off ramps are just stage one of rollout of crypto. Eventually everything stays within crypto. Eventually people get paid in crypto. Eventually DeFi takes over banking In terms of you know, being able to earn some sort of interest by taking out inefficiencies of the legacy market and being able to drop your money directly into an automated market maker to earn rewards, rather than putting it in a bank, which gives it to a third party, which gives it to a fund, which gives it to another party, which gives it to a lawyer, which gives it to another party, which then invests that money into a head, into a market to earn some interest, and then pay all the people all the way back up until you get the little pittance of interest into your bank account. Hey, let's just scrap all of that in DeFi. I mean, the legacy world cannot compete. And so everything's heading towards internalizing in being on the internet. And so these sorts of moves to ban Russia, like the other panelists have said, you just can't. It's anti-fragile. And I think they'll understand the word, the meaning of anti-fragile is that you attack Bitcoin or crypto as a whole, and the sphere figures out how to get around it and patches it up, and then 10 minutes later there's a fix. I just think if anything, all this does is test how they can do it, and maybe they'll say like, oh well, that didn't work, and they'll try another approach on how to ban crypto in the European Union when needed, when the CBDCs come out.
And finally, today we have a philosophical question, kind of a ship of theses question. There's been a new NFT, put that in quote marks, developed and discovered on the Ethereum network. The NFT from, I believe, 2014 allowed you to register a .og domain name. However, the system was never built out, and only around 60 domain names were registered in the original time period. However, people have rediscovered the NFT domain name system, and since then registered, I believe, more than 500,000 domain names on this system. The question now is much like the ship of Theseus: which is more valuable, the original 60 domain names or the 500,000 new domain names that were made with the old equipment? As Daryl Morley from the Philadelphia 76ers says, I'm in the not very vocal majority or minority. If a contract date is primary, it would be like getting the plates to print Honus Wagner baseball cards, but running it now, and then valuing the card that you just made as the same as the card from 1909. Dan Eve, do these new domain names minted with this old system have value?
Well, if the domain can be used, right, if you can still buy an OG, I think obviously the oldest ones are always going to be historically the ones of more interest, right, because they're the first ones. So it's that kind of, it's that scarcity thing, right? So the original 60, but at the end of the day, if you can still use that domain, it can still have value to it. You can still sell it on to Google, just so that they can have google.og. you know, or something like that. So yeah, currently
the system to use the domain names was never built out. This is a very test project. They now are claiming that an open source group of programmers motivated by the desire to sell these domain names is allegedly going to build out the rest of the project. I'm not sure what the roadmap was. Also, these domain names are case sensitive. So if you own capital J, Jake, and you don't own lowercase j, Jake, it's just a complete nightmare. But
that sounds very confusing. That's going to be really confusing. And you could just mess it with does, people. It does. Like, oh, I'm DanEve.com, but it's an uppercase D, lowercase A, uppercase N, lowercase E, you know.
That's the kind of thing you'd think through when you were launching the project, but wasn't thought through.
Nah.
Joshua Shigala, what do you think? They use the old plates, but they made new modern NFTs. Do they have value?
No, they don't have value. It's the whole thing doesn't have value until you can actually get a large scale browser or some adoption of the OGs to actually render to a server or to point to an IP. Before that, you're selling NFTs in a way of text. And never say never. I mean, the shit that people trade is unbelievable. I definitely say it has no value, because people add value to things that they just love. We personally know on this panel people that are buying a lot of domain names on the what was the system called?
Well, that's what I was going to say. There are two other domain name systems. There's Handshake and ENS.
Yeah.
Handshake is trying to be a full domain system. They have a copy of Bitcoin. They have their own technology stack, and they are a company. ENS allows you to send money to a wallet with a name like Vitalik.eth. You could send him a dollar. Namecoin. These are all built out functional systems in comparison to this kind of found system.
Yeah, it seems to me like a quick cash grab on on the back of, hey, this is an early NFT project.
It is interesting to see the comparisons between it being a true early NFT or it being an early NFT production facility that was only used to print 60. In comparison with Curio Cards, full disclosure, my own project, we actually printed all of our NFTs in 2017 and then sent them to the vending machine. So the people who purchased them from the vending machine in 2021 were actually getting an NFT that was made in 2017. Arnab, what do you think about the idea that these new NFT domain names could be valuable despite the fact that the system to use them is not built out?
It's similar to like this. I have a very, very beautiful, shell came from the water. It's a unique piece, actually, to be very frank. One, like, you will only find one in the entire world, right? It's scarce, right? But will you pay me $1 million for this? Scarcity does not give the value. It's the real utility with the scarcity, right? As Joshua mentioned, like, without a utility, there is no value. This is scarce, but it's not valuable in that regard. Or you want to pay me something, I'm happy to take it, to be very frank.
And that is always the thing about collectibles. It's worth as much as the next person pay for it. So in this case, many people lined up. They're very excited in this time period to purchase. But I worry if they think ahead a little, 6 months from now, a year from now, 2 years from now, will there be anyone to purchase their domain names that are case sensitive and currently non-functional? I think it's a fascinating debate, a fascinating discussion. Everyone has the value and the right to their own opinion. If you're crazy about these things, good for you. If you took a pass, that's fine as well. But we just want to discuss it as a philosophical idea. Let us know in the comments or the chat down below. Also, we forgot to tell you to push like a bunch of times today. So just pretend we said push like a dozen times. And you're like, they broke me down by saying it a dozen times. And now I'm pushing it. So let's go to the end of the show. Arnab, are you ready with a prediction or a story of the week? Go ahead.
I think Biden today told about the nuclear situation, right? We are kind of in a crisis, which is first time after the Cuban missile crisis, right? So maybe the next week we'll hear something from Elon again. Hey, why not buy some nuclear warheads instead of buying Twitter?
Yeah, it would be good if only he could purchase all the warheads at once. Dan, Eve, prediction or story of the week? Go ahead.
Yeah, I heard instead of buying Twitter for $54 billion, why doesn't he buy everyone a nuclear warhead instead, right? Surely that would end well. So my prediction or a story of the week, as usual, I'm tremendously prepared. And I am going to predict the future, and the future I predict will be that I think Musk will change his mind again. I reckon he'll try a U-turn. I reckon he will try not to buy Twitter for some reason. He'll pick some idea out of the sky, and it might just be just to mess people around, or just to kind of, I don't know, just to toy with everyone. But that'll be my little teeny prediction.
I look forward to the future where Elon Musk says he's buying Pizza Hut, but then he says, oh, I just meant for dinner. You guys just don't get it. Joshua Shigala, prediction or story of the week. Go ahead. Oh, but you're muted. It doesn't work that way.
Jeez, it doesn't work that way. The story of the week is we finally got DAO tooling set up on the standard IO. So now we are outsourcing a lot more work using dwork.xyz, which is really cool because now the community can start picking up bounties and working for the standard.io on the protocol, which I really love. And other community members pay for those bounties as well as the core team. And so there's some really cool stuff happening there. That's really exciting. So go check out the standard.io and help out.
Very cool. And we're running out of time. Thanks so much to everybody for joining us. Thanks to Arnab for being our guest. And until next time, bye-bye.